2021. Please come to order. And I'd like to wish everybody a happy new year, not a merry new year, a happy new year. I hope it's a much better year than it was the past year. Would the clerk please read the roll?
DiBella.
Here.
Bell.
Here.
Avedisian.
Here.
Buell. Bush.
Here. Here.
Camilleri. Curry.
Here.
Healy. Commissioner Healy. Hoffman. Holloway. Commissioner Holloway. Yono.
Here.
Hambly.
Here.
LaChance.
Here.
LeBeau.
Here.
Lester.
Here.
Lewis.
Here.
Magnin.
Here.
Maniscalco. Mandyke.
Here.
Murata. Is Commissioner Murata in the meeting? Hain.
Here.
Potoski. Potoski. Salemi.
Here.
Solomonides.
Here.
Sweezy.
Here.
Taylor.
Here.
Torres.
Here.
Vecino.
Here.
Wolf.
Here.
Carrier. We have a quorum.
Okay. Approval of the minutes of December the 7th, 2020. Is there a motion?
So moved, Sweezy.
It's been moved and seconded. Are there any additions or deletions? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, item four, public comments relative to agenda items. Public comments. Item five, report from the district chairman. Just a few words. First of all, we are going to reactivate, as I said to you before, the strategic planning committee. And I believe, John, that's scheduled for next week. Have you scheduled it yet?
I have not scheduled it. And I believe when we talked, you had said the week of the 18th, not next week, the following week. Is that right?
It doesn't matter, but
it's up to you. Go ahead.
I meant next week.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'll schedule it next week then.
Okay. Second issue. There's several items that we're going to be dealing with, and Scott's going to discuss a lot of them this evening. Relative to our operations, relative to our ability to raise additional revenue. And we've been pursuing this, and I think that Scott will articulate some of those tonight. But more importantly, I think that's what strategic planning ultimately is going to have to be a major part of as we deal with PFAS and we deal with FOG, which is fats, oils, and grease, which we're dealing with the University of Connecticut on a project to eliminate that within our existing system. And I think Scott will discuss that further tonight. We're going to discuss the legislature, which will be is on the agenda. I'd like to also, before I close, talk about Dan Camilleri is leaving the board. He did not pursue appointment for another 6 years. Dan has served the Metropolitan District Commission for 18 years on our board. He's done a great job, a person that was always there, always available, and he's had a pretty distinguished career, I should say. past in public service. For you that don't know, Dean also served as the mayor of Wethersfield. He also was the state senator from the first district in Hartford, prior to Senator Lieutenant Governor Feliso, who served in that seat for 18 years. I had the privilege to take Senator Feliso's place when he became Lieutenant Governor. And Dan had served there before Lieutenant Governor Feliso did. So Dan's had a pretty long run in terms of public service. So he served in state Senate. He served as a councilman, and he spent 18 years, a councilman in Wethersfield and mayor. And he also served on the Metropolitan District for 18 years, a significant amount of time to spend in public office. And I go back even further than that. I remember Dan on Franklin Avenue when I was probably 12 or 13 years old. He had the drugstore on Franklin Avenue. And so I've known Dan a long, long time. And it's been a great experience in having him as a friend, a colleague, and a mentor in many cases when I think back. So I'd just like to thank Dan and thank his family, Rose, for putting up with that for the last 60 years or so. And say to everybody that we've been very fortunate to have Dan Camilleri serving on the Metropolitan District Commission. And I wish you well, Dan, and Rose, and of course, his son, Anthony, and Anthony, I had the privilege of having him as my chief of staff when I was a majority leader in the state Senate. And when I served in the state Senate, Anthony was my chief of staff for 4 years. So I go way back with Dan, his family. His son's a wonderful young man, great daughter, and a great family. So Dan, thank you very much for your time spent on the district. Are there any other remarks? Anybody else want to share any remarks or express any remarks?
Mr. Chairman?
Yep.
Commissioner Adel here.
Yep.
I had the misfortune of following Dan as the mayor of Wethersfield. No one could live up to Dan. He was always the mayor, always will be the mayor. So it's been my pleasure to be associated with Dan going back to the 1990s, especially after I moved back to town in Wethersfield. He encouraged me to run for office the first time. He actually, pushed hard for me to consider it, and I did. And I've been following his lead ever since. There isn't a committee in Wethersfield of any importance that Dan hasn't been associated with in some way, shape, or form. You have to sometimes say to Dan, again, let somebody else do this, Richard. It can't always be you. But he's always been there. He's done a wonderful job. The citizens of Wethersfield absolutely adore him. I can't say anything more than the chairman has so eloquently already said, other than to thank him for his many years of service. And I look forward to, once things have calmed down with COVID, to be able to come back on his patio and have a cigar with him and celebrate all this great work. But thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, this is Scott Phillipson.
Scott?
I'd just like to thank the commissioner as well. He's been extremely supportive of the MDC and its mission, and particularly very supportive of myself. So I extremely appreciate that for everything he's done for all of us. Rose and himself, have a happy new year.
Further remarks? Okay. Item number 6, report from the Chief Executive Officer.
Yes, Scott. Mr. Chairman, Scott Shelton, thank you. Just a few things. I just want to mention the fact that we have had requests from the town of Wethersfield and East Hartford and Rocky Hill to present our budget There's actually a meeting, Zoom meeting tonight for the town of Weathersfield at 7 o'clock. Kelly Shane, who's our CAO, and her staff will present at 7 p.m. tonight the budget, which we have presented numerous times to our board. Nikki has been reaching out to the other towns to try and coordinate times in which we can present our budget to them. As you might have seen, Nick always provides a packet of communication every monthly, and he had sent out a press release on December 15th of the budget, and we received three articles, Journal Inquirer, Current, and Bloomfield Messenger, all very positive for the MDC. So it's been a very, I just got to thank Nick and Julie. They're doing a great job in outreach and communication to our towns and to the media and social media. So thank you to them for all the hard work they're doing there. I would also like to just talk a little bit about the fact of what we expect to, we're going to have a lot to talk about in our board meetings and our subcommittee meetings. And I just wanted to kind of go through some of those things that we want to talk about this coming year. So in personnel and pension, we have we have lots more to talk about improving our wellness program. We also have 3713, which is our technical union, in negotiations with developing multitasking job descriptions, which our chair and co-chair have been party to. When it comes to Board of Finance, we need to present. We have presented pieces and parts to the chair and co-chair, but we need to finalize, and we would like the Board of Finance to adopt the budget, treasury, and comptroller new procedures and policies that have been developed with Cohn-Resnick. We also need to talk about, we've talked about this throughout the budget, is to proactively talk about the riverfront recapture and those kinds of things through the next year, so we don't have to deal with those at budget time. When it comes to the Water Bureau, we have, as the chairman mentioned, we have lots going on with BPW. We need to give a presentation, an update presentation to Rich and his subcommittee on the Clean Water Project. We are going to have to start thinking and talking about the expectation is that we are going to receive an approval from DEEP on the integrated plan. So, and the goal is what would be different this time is we typically submit a long-term control plan.
But they got so many people on going to talk.
Okay. Thank you, John. Every 5 years we submit a plan, and that plan is really a roadmap to getting to the end of the Clean Water Project, which is, quote, a $2.6 billion program. We have about, we spent $1.8 billion. We need to spend roughly another billion to finish, which would take us through into like 2050-ish. But DEEP has agreed that really hasn't been working for all of us. And since we only approve a plan 5 years, we might as well simply develop a plan through the integrated plan, which encapsulates work that's going to be done in the next 5 years. And so, as I mentioned at our last board meeting, we're going to need to talk. Once the board approves the integrated plan, we're going to have to talk through our options on what we do for a referendum. And there's probably more, but the options that I see right now are simply going in front of the public asking, like, you could do this immediately after approval. You could ask the public to approve the MDC's ability to utilize the $20 million rule, which is now 21 and change, and that increases with the index every year. That's been approved as part of the budget process. You could ask the public to approve that, and then we could utilize the $20 million rule to do smaller clean water projects. Or we could go to full referendum and ask for, quote, the amount of money that we need to get through the next 5 years. Or we could simply, you know, obviously ask for our bond council to rule on whether or not we can use the $20 million rule without going to referendum. So there's options there, but we need to talk through them. Our first goal is to work with Commissioner Vecino through BPW and get the approval and present that to BPW. We also have that's tied to very important stormwater work in West Hartford, and West Hartford is committed to doing $30 million worth of their own stormwater work in 2023, and the goal would be to jointly do projects. The town would pay for the stormwater work, and we would pay for our clean water work as a joint project, but we need the referendum, or we need the integrated plan to get approved, and we need a funding source to go with it. We also need to talk about land utilization. We need to talk about recreational rates. We need to talk about drought triggers. We've committed to, we're working diligently now with developing new drought triggers for our water supply plan. So there's a lot of good stuff. We've been working heavily with UConn, and this is more of a necessity, a maintenance necessity, rather than a revenue stream. It possibly could generate revenue, but right now we're simply trying to find a way. We've got 1,600 restaurants within the district area, and basically all of those restaurants are dumping grease into the sewer system, and that grease literally creates, you know, that's the mortar, and the rocks and the bottles are the bricks in the sewer system. And as an example, and I've said this before, we spend about $300,000 a year cleaning the sewer siphons at the convention center that go under the highway, the Whitehead Common Highway. So we need a way to get the grease out of the pipe rather than sending it to the plant and then cleaning the sewer system all year long. Our goal with UConn and their consultants is to really find a solution utilizing UConn students and their environmental program to educate the 1,600 restaurateurs as to why it's so important to collect the grease, which is mandated by DEEP. It's mandated to be collected on site. But the problem is the equipment that the restaurateurs utilize is heavily maintenance oriented, and typically that those tanks just never get cleaned, and the sewer winds up overflowing with the grease into our sewer system. So working hard with UConn to really help us and really educate the community on that. So those are the types of things we want to do in 2021, and there's a lot more, obviously. I would like to talk a little bit about Corona. As you know, we've been very, very proactive in our Corona task force that's really headed up by the heads of all of our departments. And as you know, the CARES Act, federal act that sponsored the 80 hours of sick time and the FMLA, paid FMLA, 10 weeks of paid FMLA for employers with less than 500 employees, that started, as we know, in early March. And the federal government did not approve the time until April 1st. So we had almost a month of employees where they were sent home because of the CDC guidelines and the 14-day rule. And we chose, the MDC chose to implement that program for the 2-week sick paid and or the FMLA for childcare related issues. As we know, schools were all closed, daycares were closed. We implemented that in March, and we gave that to our employees who needed it. And then in April of 2020, the law was passed, and we couldn't say, okay, we gave it to everybody in March, so we don't have to. We actually had to give it twice. Not everybody used it. Very, very few, less than 15 people in that time frame were even affected. But we chose to initiate the program early, even though it hadn't been approved by the government, and I updated the board on that. As you know, this program ended on December 31st, But the federal government did decide to extend the program through March 31st, 2021 with no mandate. There's no mandate to require employers to provide this benefit. I've directed staff HR that I believe that fairness was if you had not utilized it, so if you did not utilize your two-week sick time, and there's plenty of people who did not, and or you did not exhaust your 10 weeks of FMLA for daycare-related, we would authorize the staff to utilize that up through March 31st. So we're not giving our staff any more than we already previously authorized, but we're simply allowing employees who hadn't yet needed to use it, utilize it through March 31st. The other important thing is Jamie and Bob from HR, that they do a tremendous job tracking the COVID-related changes. The CDC and the state change almost on a daily basis in terms of the recommendations. We have continually followed their recommendations, and we will still continue to do that. We are and have filled out a survey request from DPH. We are considered obviously a water utility, and we would be one of the utilities that would be authorized to get and receive a vaccine in the early stages of the implementation. We have filled out the paperwork. We have yet and are waiting to hear back from DPH as to whether or not and what the details are and how it would be implemented. I also want to make a point that during that last snowstorm of the 17th and 18th, that was a Thursday and a Friday, as you know, we're expecting 20 inches of snow. There were some parts of New York that got 40 inches. We probably averaged 10 to 12 in this area. But in preparation for that, we did utilize the same union contract language that we utilized during COVID, which was we alternated staff Thursday and Friday, and that way we avoided any overtime-related issues that would be imposed because of the language of the contract. So I want to thank the unions for that. Has been pulling together to try and get through these rough times with COVID. I've already mentioned the clean water program and what our options will be there. I am planning to bring a complete update to Commissioner Vecino to BPW at our next meeting. So with that, Mr. Chair, if anybody's had any questions.
The tunnel, are you going to say something about the tunnel?
We're roughly about 13,000 feet into the tunnel, and we've been doing much better than we did this summer. We're averaging about 150 feet a day, a week, which is much better than we were during the summer. We're in basalt, which is very hard rock. And so we've had much, I've said before, water is our biggest enemy. Drilling a horizontal tunnel is like drilling a vertical well. Your intent on a well is to fracture the rock and to allow water to seep in. And unfortunately, when you're drilling a tunnel, the same exact thing happens. You're fracturing the rock and water's coming in, but your goal is to keep it out. So we've been very fortunate over the last month and a half or so that we've been in really hard basalt rock, and we haven't had any water problems at all. And I've mentioned this before, but we are obviously we need to be done with the entire projects, which is the tunnel, the pump station, contract 4, which is Franklin Avenue, and contract 5, which is New Britain Avenue, which is for the West Hartford and Newington SSOs. That all has to be done by 2024. We're on track for that. And we are in part of our discussions with DEEP. We have made it very clear that we're trying to make sure that we are within budget. And we want to make sure that we are able to complete contracts 2, 3, and 5, which is our EPA mandate, which is the consent decree. Contract 4 is, as you know, came in. The bids were well over our estimate, and we have decided to break that project down and to break it into smaller projects. Our goal is to redesign that and utilize the existing Franklin consolidation conduit and save us hopefully about $20 to $30 million. So we're trying to find a better way to do it. So we're working diligently on that. But if there's any other questions.
Are there any other questions? Anybody have questions for the Chief Executive Officer? Oh, that's good. Okay. Okay. Item number 8, the District Clerk Service of Tax Warrants for Fiscal Year 2020.
Bill, did we forget 7?
I'm sorry, Chris.
I don't know how you can forget me, Bill. I don't know how you do
it. The district clerk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, everyone. Happy New Year to all of you. I want to go through a couple of the more important cases that we have pending and give you a status on that. The first, and always the first, and it should be, it's our ongoing effort to get DEEP to pay their fair share of the discharges from the landfill, which they have refused to pay to date. They're paying a modest charge, which is the sewer user charge, which is the inappropriate fee. The liquid discharge fee on a per gallon basis is the fee that they should be paying. The amount outstanding is upwards of $12.5 million. We have a pending claim with the claims commissioner, two pending claims, in fact, one that was filed several years ago that the claims commissioner has yet to act upon and which was referred to the General Assembly last session. The General Assembly and the Judiciary Committee did not meet on any claims last year. And so the they're going to consider it, hopefully, this year. It starts with the Judiciary Committee. We submitted our claim to that committee. As you know, I believe you all got a copy of that which we filed with the Judiciary. We hope to have a hearing on that claim. We're asking one of two areas of relief. One is to allow us to sue the state for our monies, which is something the claims commissioner could have done, but has not acted upon it on the request. And the second alternative is to have the state approve a resolution directing payment of our outstanding fees right directly from the state to the MDC. I will tell you that more likely scenario is that they give us permission to sue as opposed to actually authorizing payment. But the payment is an option that we want to at least put in front of the legislature. I'll keep you posted on that. Everything is remote in the General Assembly this year, but they've developed the technology and the hardware infrastructure to conduct remote hearings. So I'm optimistic that technology will allow us to present our case in short order and get some action by the General Assembly on our claim. I will tell you that we've sent letters to our delegation. Our delegation has in turn responded by assigning a joint letter from all of our senators and representatives directed to the Judiciary Committee supporting relief for the MDC in one form or the other, payment or the allowance to sue. So we've got a lot of support from our legislative delegation to the extent that many of you, and I know you have communicated with your representatives and senators to solicit their support. We certainly appreciate that. We're also working on a resolution of the case, as you know. We have a an agreement in principle on language for an agreement that would be a global resolution of all matters between the DEEP and NDC as it relates to the landfill. Right now, there's two areas of the agreement that are left blank, and that those both things have to do with money. One is what they should pay for the back amounts due, and one blank is what they should pay going forward. We do not have a resolution on that. We do have certainly the chairman, myself, and former Attorney General George Jepson, who I've retained assisting us on that. And each day, each week, it gets a little more promising, but I have nothing concrete to report on any solid numbers. It is before those who are going to make the decision, and those include the governor's office, DEEP, and most significantly, OPM. And as soon as I get word of some offer, we will come right back to you. We may have to have a special meeting. We may have to act quickly on it, but you'll know in real time what that offer is. It's somewhat frustrating. I get it. It's frustrating for us at the staff level as well. But the wheels of government turn ever so slowly, particularly in this environment. So we'll be patient. The second issue I want to talk about is the Colebrook Reservoir. We have refused to pay any further invoices to the Army Corps of Engineers on our former, and I emphasize the word former, obligations under the now terminated contract between us and the Army, the United States government. And quite frankly, we told the Army Corps that we were going to do that in advance because we want to maintain the good relationship we have with our local branch of the Army Corps. And they understood that. In fact, they in some respect encourage us to pursue that avenue because they don't have the authority to let us out of a contract. I mean, our opinion is we're only out, but they need to take action. So absent that authority, they suggested that we kick it up to the federal level. We've done that with the non-payment. They have referred it to DOJ. They're waiting for DOJ to react to our non-payment. And at such time as they do, certainly I'll report back. But right now it's at least for in the federal government, it's at a holding pattern for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is the election and now the results of the election. So hopefully after January 20th, we'll get some word from the DOJ on how they want to handle this. We have reached out to our Congressman Larson, and we let him know where we are on this and that at some point we may have to elicit his support and the support of the balance of our congressional delegation and our two U.S. senators to assist us in getting some finality and resolution to this matter once and for all. The other matter that we had pending on the merits and substantively is the Glastonbury class action suit, which, as you know, has been settled for a total payment from the district, not in one lump sum, but a total payment of $7.8 million, plus the cost of an administrator for the class class at hand. That administrator's cost is approximately $120,000 to $150,000. It's not unusual for the defendant in class action suits to pay the cost for administrating the claim. It's a relatively modest fee. The bulk of the settlement had to do with the $7.8 million. We are presently, and through good work of John Myrtle and the staff upstairs in finance, particularly Kelly Shane's office and her staff, they're working on developing the actual list of payees. And that can, while it may seem easy, we're giving credit, so it may seem rather simple. We just give our credit to our customers on a quarterly or a monthly, excuse me, we pay monthly bills, monthly basis. But it's not as easy as it sounds. We have people that are within the period of the imposition of the what has now been determined an illegal fee that have moved that we have to find. There are people that have moved and now lives somewhere else in the district that we have to locate and give the credit to. So it's a little more complicated than it might seem. I will tell you that there's less people in the two categories I've just identified, but they're the hardest ones, obviously, to find. So we're going through that exercise, and so it's over, but it's not quite over from the administrative perspective. Speaking of which, the other case I want to talk about is 777 Main. That was the challenge by a developer, of our supplemental assessment on that property. That property, as you know, converted from an office space to a residential structure. And we issued a special assessment, approximately $250,000, which was paid into the special sewer service fund, but it was paid under protest. An appeal was filed. It went to the trial court. We lost at the trial court. We filed an appeal, and we were able to convince the Supreme Court to take the case directly, so we didn't have to go to the appellate court first or the Court of Appeals. So the Supreme Court ruled back in, I think it was early December, ruled in our favor on both issues. One, they ruled that we had the authority to issue a supplemental assessment. And two, they ruled that the methodology in which we determined the amount of the special assessment or supplemental assessment was allowed under law. So we won on both issues, but the Supreme Court, in its wisdom, remanded the case to the trial court for what it considered to be or identified as further proceedings. And it's ill-defined within the Supreme Court judgment or decision what those further proceedings would be. We have suggested to the court that those proceedings really only related to the number of units that were subject to the assessment. The developer got a permit to convert into 286 units. He only built 285. Quite frankly, this is the proverbial tail wagging the dog. The amount is about $2,000 at issue. And we had offered to stipulate to the amount of actual units, 285. But the plaintiffs, the developer, decided to try to convince now the trial court that these further proceedings include a revisit to all the issues that they never put evidence on at the trial level. We were assigned to Judge McCousher over in Hartford Superior Court. We briefed the issue on what was the scope of the remand from the Supreme Court. We had a hearing last week on the issue, and we expect a ruling from Judge McCousher. He's usually works very quickly within the next 30 days. I spoke to our lawyers about after the oral argument. I thought he did an excellent job in presenting our case. We don't think that the plaintiff should have another opportunity to retry a case that was already decided against them. We sense that Judge McCousher will agree with us, but again, we're still waiting on that decision. The other issue that I want to talk about is what is on the agenda tonight, but is going to be hopefully taken off the agenda or postponed to February, the EPA consent order issue with the smokestack or the emissions stacks down at Brainerd Road. We don't have approval from management and EPA. I sent you an email today alerting you to that fact. We just found out this morning that they have yet to act. So absent that, there's no need for us to go forward with the risk of going forward again or reconsidering it in the event management down at in Washington make any changes or propose any changes. So that'll be postponed, hopefully by the board, not by me, but by the board. Finally, two final issues. One is in the two audits, past audits, we had a management note calling for a fraud risk assessment. That's been completed as of mid-December of last year. So hopefully, and we've gotten some assurance from Bloom Shapiro that will no longer be a management note on any audit. Fraud risk assessment is an ongoing process. It's not a snapshot in time. So we'll continue to monitor that and improve our internal processes to make sure that the risk of fraud is minimized. And then finally, I want to report some changes in the legal department in terms of the compensation and contracts that we have outstanding. We have three part-time attorneys in the legal department. They all work a minimum of 20 hours a week on average. It's a total of 1,000 hours per year that they're obligated to give us in legal work. We pay one of them in 2021, $87,000. We pay another one of them approximately $84,000. We pay a third one $30,000, which to me is, at least for the one making $30,000 for the same amount of time, same amount of effort, inherently unfair. They do excellent work. They're wholly on board in my goal of doing more in-house than we've done in the past. Not rely so much on outside counsel, but rely upon counsel that you have on your on my staff. And so I've taken apart. I had a surplus from 2020. I've taken part of that surplus and moved that to the salary account for 2021, so that all three lawyers will be making the same amount of money, $87,000. I think it's fair, and I want to report that to the board. We've also, the lawyer who was making $30,000 was also billing us separately, hourly, on work that was performed on the Clean Water Project. We're also trying to get away from having lawyers on staff being billing hourly on work, on other work. So that outside work will be eliminated. There'll be no more billing. He may still do the work, but there will be no more hourly billing. The average on that costs the district between $40,000 and $50,000 a year. That's no longer going to happen. And now you won't see that on the operating budget because that was a capital expense because it was clean water work. But if we can save money on the Clean Water Project, then all the better. And then finally, we have an existing legal contract with the law offices of J. Malsinski for $125,000. That is not going to be renewed for 2021. The net effect of these changes is, without getting into right now the lobbyist or legislative consultant work, The net change is significant, and net savings is significant to the NDC. So I wanted to bring that to your attention. It's approximately, if I include the lobbyist part of it, which I'm going to go over shortly, the net savings is about $80,000. So that ends my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions?
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Avedisian.
So, John, go ahead.
Thanks for your report, Chris. It's very detailed. The question I've got, two things. Number one, how does the PFAS, because I haven't heard anything, maybe I missed it, or maybe we're going to talk about it later, going to what's going on with DEEP? Is that going to be some kind of monkey wrench they're going to throw in the middle of it, and we think we're getting this, but really we're going to get this because we have to?
Well, that's an excellent question, Commissioner. Thank you for that. And I will tell you that as part of our discussions with DEEP, and that was the discussions between myself, your CEO, an attorney from the AG's office, and Betsy Wingfield at DEEP. This goes back to March of 2020. Your CEO, to his credit, made it clear that whatever we might agree to on the discharge from the landfill does not include any additional cost that the district may incur by increased regulatory action or activity or movement by either the state or EPA on the PFAS issue. And we added language, accepted language to the draft agreement that particularly calls that out and treats that, will treat that separately. In the event DEEP and or EPA time they come up with regulations that are going to address the PFAS issue. Right now, there's no standards by which to determine whether one is in compliance or not. But those are coming, and probably relatively quickly, judging from the what will be the new makeup at EPA Washington. So,
Chris,
that's how we've addressed the issue. So it is separate from the draft agreement.
Yeah, Chris, that means that on the landfill, the ammonia deal will be dealt separately from the PFAS deal, basically.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you, Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Item number 8, District Clerk, service of tax warrants for fiscal year 2001. We'll receive the report. There is no action. The report is being received by the board. Right, John? That's just a receipt,
That's correct. It's just I'm notifying the board that we serve the tax warrants on the 8-member towns for 2021.
Okay. Item 9, Committee on Organization. Recommended action, receive the report and adopt the resolution. Is there a motion to adopt?
So moved.
Second. So moved.
Removed and seconded. Commissioner Sweezy?
Yeah, it was brought in front of the committee, and the committee approved the 3 or 4 names for the different committees evening.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Item number 10. Committee on MDC Government, consideration and potential action regarding appointment of legislative consultants. Is there a motion to adopt?
Yes, move the item, please.
Adopt. Is there a second?
Second.
Second.
Mr. Chris, Chairman.
I'm sorry, who's someone Chairman, asking a question?
Yeah, just to summarize, the appointments that were.
I'm sorry, Alan, I should have.
No. So the appointments that were made, the changes that were made, were discussed and approved unanimously, just for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chris Stone, you want to? This is
sure. Your... Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Chairman Hoffman, for your work on the government committee in getting the contracts approved. Selection and contracts approved unanimously at that committee. We have presently, and I guess the easiest way to do it is to tell you where we were in 2020 and where we'd like to be in 2021. We have two state lobbyists who are solely devoted to state lobbying work. That's Gaffney Bennett, which is Brendan Fox, and Strategic Outreach Solutions, which is Janice Fleming. In addition to those two state lobbyists, we have Steve Bonifanti with SJB Strategies, who spends part of his time, part of his lobbying time at the state capitol. Most of his work is done along with Squire Patton Boggs at the federal level. So that's your lobbyist team. I would also tell you, frankly, that both I do some work and the chairman certainly does some advocacy on a part of the MDC as well. But with that, we're proposing the same legislative consultants as we had for 2020, but we're asking for your consideration of increasing the compensation for two of those consultants. So let me talk about the ones who are staying the same. Squire Patton Boggs would remain at $150,000 per year, which for a federal lobbyist is very competitive. SJB Strategies will remain at $20,000 for his state work and $70,000 for his federal work. That's Steve Bonifanti. And as you know, he also serves as one of our part-time assistant district counsels. So he's also compensated there as well. The two changes relate to Gaffney Bennett or Brendan and Strategic Solutions, Outreach Solutions, which is Janice. I alluded in my report to the elimination of a contract of $125,000 with law offices of J. Melsinski. The work that Jay was doing on the legal side with the legislature in terms of advising us of legal impacts of certain changes, amendments, or actions by either the General Assembly or any administrative agency within the state will now be done by Brendan initially or primarily, and also by me. Again, following through on the theme of doing more in-house. So we're asking that Brendan's compensation be increased from $40,000 to $60,000 to reflect that additional scope of responsibilities. As to Janice, we're asking for a modest increase in her annual compensation from $50,000 to $60,000. And that reflects what we consider is going to be a heightened role for Janice, both in terms of addressing the relationship with the Black and Hispanic caucus in the legislature, of working with that same caucus within the Judiciary Committee to make sure that we get some positive relief from that committee on our claim with DEEP, and to also address issues that our urban legislators are facing in terms of the cost of doing business and the cost of utilities for people, both businesses and individuals, and increasing our outreach in addressing their concerns. So we all do that, by the way, as staff at the staff level and U.S. commissioners. We certainly recognize that. But it's more and more people are calling their representatives and senators for relief and for information on issues of affordability and charges, particularly on their water bills. So Janice has been, quite frankly, to her credit, fielding those admirably, but that work is going to increase. And so this increase for her would reflect that additional expanded scope of responsibility. So that's the proposal. Again, it's the same, but for the changes in cost. I would indicate, as I indicated to the Committee on Government, that in 2019, and I put Steve Bonifanti's fees aside because he's primarily a federal lobbyist, and his numbers aren't going to change. But in 2019, in addition to Steve, we had Brendan, Pat McCabe, and Rich Balducci performing the primary state lobbying work at a cost of $120,000, $40,000 per lobbyist. We then switched in 2020. We no longer have Pat and Rich Balducci on the team. They were replaced by Janice. And for a year, we saved a little money. What this proposal is, we're going back to the $120,000 total, at least divided amongst two people instead of three. They can do the work. They're willing to do the work. And they have done the work. And so I just want you to know that it's while it's an increase, we did have that level over a year ago. And I also would indicate that, as I explained during my report, there is a savings in the overall compensation for lawyers / lobbyists to the tune of saving approximately $88,000 when it's all told. So and it's transparent. I mean, it's defendable. It's fully disclosed, and we hope you would support the action of the government.
Further questions? If not,
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make a comment. Both Brendan and Dennis are excellent advocates of the Capitol, and just want to make a note of that and speak in favor of both of them and the work that they do up there for the MDC.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, James.
Further discussion? If not, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Item number 11, Bureau of Public Works, consideration and potential. John, what is the total, well, the language? This isn't the EPA issue. That's the next one.
No, this is the EPA issue.
Yeah. Oh, this is. I'm sorry. You got, okay, I see it. Okay, this is not, we're going to postpone action on this. As Chris said in his report, we're still waiting for documents from EPA to finalize this, the incineration issue relative to discharge. So without objection, I'll remove that from the agenda. And is there objection? No objection. We'll take that up at the next meeting. Hopefully the feds will have provided us with the information that's going to be necessary for us to complete this. Okay. Commissioner, comments and questions?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. This is Commissioner Salemi here.
Go ahead, Commissioner.
So thanks, Bill. Just going through the press releases, the little package of press releases and articles about the district. I noticed that there were a couple that had headlines that said that you know, MDC raises water rate 1%, but there were no headlines about how we didn't raise the ad valorem at all. That was that there was a zero. In fact, there's no stories about the ad valorem being zero. So my understanding is we're going to start reporting to the towns or going through the budget with the towns.
We will be soon. And we're starting next week. Actually, we're starting tonight after this meeting at 7 o'clock. We have a Weathersfield meeting.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we'll be able to get – you know, at least get with the towns and explain just how important their support for the integrated plan and for our settlement with DEEP is, and that it's not likely to be another 0% increase in the ad valorem, you know, unless we can keep, you know, the partnership that we've built with them together. So, and I do have a question for Attorney Stone. So, Chris, when you were describing the settlement with the town of Glastonbury, you mentioned that that there's going to be an administrator for the settlement. Is that something the court appoints? Does the court appoint an administrator for that?
Now, through you, Mr. Chairman, the parties agreed on an administrator based upon certainly that the competency of the administrator and their experience in matters like this. It's required by the court to have an administrator because they want an impartial third party to not only receive payment but distribute payment to those who are eligible to receive the award. So it's not terribly unusual. In fact, it's in cases like this of this size, it's required. You got to have it. Having us administer it or the plaintiffs administer it. As to the plaintiffs, it would have been a burden that they just couldn't meet. And as to us, that's like, you know, us making judgment calls that we really shouldn't be making. We provide the information. They decide who's eligible, and they distribute the payments. And it's based upon the number of hours that our staff has put into getting the information, the cost for the administrator is relatively low.
I would say that I'm not arguing the cost or anything. I just wonder where you find an administrator. It's like a pool. Is this like AAA? where you have arbitration kind of things, whereas the pool guys or.
Yeah. Well, this entity doesn't do just class action administration, but there aren't that many people who do, not many entities that do, because there's not that many class actions that are brought to this point in the state of Connecticut. So You're hitting on an interesting point, but our choices were slim, but we found one that so far is doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Further questions? Further
Thanks,
questions?
Chris.
Other business?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Avedisian.
Yes, John.
One more question, either for Chris or Zach. Where are we on Berlin? I haven't heard anything, and with everything that's going on, I'm assuming it's going to fall into Chris's capable hands at one point. So could you give us an idea of what's going on with that?
Sure. I could give you a brief, and then if Scott or Chris Levesque want to chime in. We have, as to the amounts outstanding that relate to charges from 2010 to present, with a payment that's going to be made this week on the maintenance of a pump station or capital cost of a pump station, we will be current with our payments to Berlin. The remaining issues are going to be, frankly, claims by Berlin that we owe monies prior to 2016. And we believe we have a defense to that. And we're going to meet with or speak with Ray Jarema to try to reach a resolution on that. And obviously we'll bring that back to the board if we have either way, but certainly any proposed resolution we're going to bring back to the board for approval. And that's going to be in relatively short order. We understand that the direction from some board members as well as the boards or bureaus of cognizance to get this resolved sooner rather than later. And so we hope to have something for you to consider at your February 7th meeting.
Good evening. This is Ray Jarema from Berlin Water Control. I look forward to that discussion. Thank you.
You're welcome. Further discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Question? Chairman, question to Chris Stone. Chris, also, the Water Bureau did vote on sending this. A motion was made by Commissioner Payne to send it to the full board, but then Bill said we would send it. We could send it to finance. There was no agreement, but the Water Bureau did say we do owe them. I think it was between $30,000 and $35,000, and that would be the full payment. You said the full payment's being offered, but that only goes back to 2016, you said, or
2009.
Okay, there are other monies that some of the Water Bureau members believe we do owe the Berlin Water, and that should be under a full discussion of the board if you don't work this settlement out this month. We've talked and we said we would have it on the agenda in February if you don't get an agreement made.
That's correct, and there was a motion made by Commissioner Payne. That motion passed, and then there was a, as you pointed out, a subsequent motion to, rather than go to the district board directly, made by Chairman DiBella to move it to Board of Finance, which we will do. Bless you.
And you know that motion was never seconded, so we have no problem. I have no problem sending it to Finance. But I wanted to come back to the board to give them an opportunity, unless you work it out over the next, month.
Well, we intend to bring it back to the board one way or the other.
It will come back to the board, Ray. It's not going from finance to any place other than back to the board.
Okay.
Okay?
Perfect.
Further questions? If not, the appropriate motions in order. Move without objection.
Okay, see him. So move.
Without objection, we stand adjourned. Be safe, people.
Thank you.